Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Hello, welcome back to the show. Justin Brierley here with another classic replay from our Unbelievable archive. And going back this week to a two-parter from November 2012. This was the first of two shows where I was joined by Tim Mawson, the Oxford philosopher, whose paper, Praying to Stop Being an Atheist, inspired something that we called the Atheist Prayer Experiment. This was a really memorable set of shows. It was part of a big project at the time. 71 atheists and agnostics signed up to this experiment, committing to pray for God to reveal himself to them over 40 days. Well, did anyone end up believing in God? We'd revealed the results and heard from a variety of people who took part, including Andrew, Kendra, Laura and Frecky, as well as exploring questions that arose. And we confronted questions such as, was this really an experiment? What does an atheist pray anyway? Does it matter which God is being prayed to? Do the results have any bearing on the question of God's existence? So, lots to get stuck into as we unpack how that prayer experiment went a decade ago. And just before we do, a reminder that Unbelievable is no longer just this one show. It's the umbrella ministry under which we're bringing you many, many great conversations and resources. We are Premier Unbelievable Faith Explored. Come and check us out at premierunbelievable.com. Tim, thank you for joining me. Great to have you with me, having, got into cahoots about this quite a time ago.
Thank you very much for inviting me along.
You are a philosopher at Oxford. Tell us a little bit about what you do there.
Yeah, so I'm one of two philosophy fellows at St. Peter's College in the University of Oxford. And my main area of research specialism is philosophy of religion. I'm also quite interested in moral philosophy. And I wrote this paper that you were kind enough to notice and uses the inspiration for this a few years ago. And very interested, as I say, to hear what those who've taken it up have made of the experiment that you constructed off the back of it.
Mm. You've written a number of papers. You are personally a Christian.
That's right, yeah.
And that obviously informs some of what you do in your philosophy. You're interested in arguments for God's existence and that sort of thing.
Yes, mainly I think about traditional philosophical puzzles surrounding the divine properties, things like could an omnipotent being create an object so heavy that he himself couldn't lift it, those sorts of things, and then arguments for and against God's existence. And as I'm sure you and your listeners will know, there are lots of arguments for and against God's existence in the 2,500 years people in the Western tradition have been thinking philosophically about this. One of them is the argument from religious experience. And in a way, this paper is a reflection on whether there could be an argument for atheism from irreligious experience, if you will. Mm. Could it ever be reasonable for an atheist to use as part of their argumentative armory the fact that they'd had no experience of God? Is absence of evidence, evidence of absence in this particular case? In what circumstances might it be? And if they could, and the thesis of the paper was to the effect that they could have some hopes that such an argument might be one they could add to their armoury, well then are they, in some circumstances, under an obligation, epistemic obligation, if you like, to pray to God that he exists, if only so that when they hear nothing in reply, they can say to their theist chums, aha, I've got this little bit of evidence that he doesn't exist, viz. That I prayed to him and he didn't answer me.
We did talk about this in a show back in the summer, and so I do encourage you, if you haven't heard that, to go back and revisit that episode. But just briefly, you do lay out an example of a dark room.
Yeah, Yes, sure. So this is what I suggest is an analogy that the atheist should accept, and if it is analogical in the relevant respects, should then take as licensing this project of, sounds a bit paradoxical perhaps, praying to stop being an atheist. So the analogy is of a darkened room. There's a room which is dark. Various people go into the room, come out of it. Some of those coming out say that they found someone else in the room, in a relationship with whom they found great personal significance, a wise old man who has guided them through life. Others who come out of the room say that there's nobody else in the room at all, it's pitch black, and there's nobody but the individuals going in and out of it. If you're an atheist, then with regard to the wise old man, I'm saying that's analogical to your thinking that there almost certainly is no wise man in the room. But if you find yourself in the room one day with no other pressing business to hand, then it struck me that it would be epistemically dilatory of you not to use that opportunity to...
I love the fact you use epistemically dilatory of you in just normal conversation. Well, but
lazy, I suppose, is a quicker way of saying dilatory. And so being dilatory as I am, maybe I should say lazy. Anyway, if you find yourself in the room one day, you should say, you know, is there anyone there? If you're there, speak to me. And if in saying that you receive some, contrary to your expectations, of course, you receive some reply, well, that would be evidence that your scepticism about the existence of the wise old man was ill-founded. If conversely, as you expect, you hear nothing in reply, well, that is itself a little bit of evidence that you were right all along in thinking there was no wise man there. And then I say, okay, so the analogous situation would suggest itself to be that if you're an atheist and you haven't yet done anything like this, you should pray in a pretty concerted way for a period of time.
And it had mixed reactions when I sort of suggested this as a sort of public project.
Yeah.
We called it the Atheist Prayer Experiment, and some people objected to the whole idea of it being an experiment. We'll come to that later. But for now, the results.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Okay. So what happened? Well, 71 people signed up to take part in the Atheist Prayer Experiment, praying for 40 days. Now, at the time of this recording, we haven't had everyone come back to us with their final results. So, at this point, I can tell you only the results we've definitely received in, which are that 37 of the 71 say no. No God revealed themselves to me during the course of this experiment. And of those 37, two actually dropped out fairly early on. Two people who signed up for the experiment say they do believe in God now. Kendra and Kelly. Now, Kendra, we're going to be hearing from in a moment's time. Kelly will wait till next week's episode, I think, before hearing from her. So that's the results as they stand. Obviously, still waiting on quite a few to come back with their final decision as to whether they feel anything happened in the experiment. But obviously, from that statistic alone of what we have had back so far, we can assume that the vast majority of saying no, nothing's happening here. We'll talk about that as we get into it. But why don't we right now hear from someone who has been taking part and has got back to me with his results. Andrew. Andrew, welcome along to the show.
Hi there, Justin. Thank you.
Great to have you with us. Andrew, what made you want to take part in the Atheist Prayer Experiment?
Well, I nearly didn't, because I thought it was a terribly designed experiment. I used to be a scientist, and I realise it's not, I think Tim alluded to this, it's not a strict scientific experiment, and I listened to the show on that and thought, fair enough. I read the paper and I thought, he's got a point. There is no harm in gathering evidence. If someone isn't prepared to put their lack of faith to the test, then they can't. It's not reasonable for them to go around and ask Christians to put their faith to the test, be it through questioning or other means. So I thought it was a reasonable ask. And I thought the analogy with the old man in the room was reasonable, and it was a fair, and it might be interesting. I don't think any harm could be done by it.
You didn't take part at all in the Facebook group, or even, I think, really tell anyone you were taking part. You really wanted this to be as little encumbered by outside influences as possible, didn't you, Andrew?
That's right. because I think that if someone would have found out, someone would have talked to me, and then they, you know, and would have influenced my thoughts, and even knowing that people are watching what I'm writing would have influenced what I write and what I think. I think if you ask a psychologist, I think their degree psychologists really struggle to try and get rid of bias from experiments, and trying to measure people's thoughts, it's almost impossible to get rid of bias. So this fell into that category for me.
Yeah, we'll talk about the whole scientific aspect of it. Just at the moment, though, obviously you're one of those who reported a negative result, in the sense that you don't believe God spoke to you or revealed himself to you. Did you find any value in taking part in the experiment?
Yeah, I think it kind of exposed more clearly the reasons why I don't want to believe in God. I can't remember who said it was, God doesn't exist and I hate him. It was David Robertson. That was a great quote. And I thought it's fair that if I don't believe in God because I don't want to believe in God, that I let that be known. I guess it cuts both ways. There might be Christians who just don't want to not believe in God. You know, they have other reasons. They don't have any evidence themselves that their belief is so ingrained that they just don't want to entertain the idea of non-belief. So I looked. So it kind of uncovered reasons other than logical reasons. What would be putting me off, you know, entertaining a belief in God or dismissing revelation?
That's very interesting and very honest of you, if I might say so. The other interesting aspect of this is that you find yourself quite often surrounded by Christians, don't you? And so this is a sort of stuff you talk about on a fairly regular basis, though they didn't know you were taking part in this experiment.
Yeah. And again, part of that is, I think, a bit like Marcus Brigstocke, I think the church has something wonderful to offer. And there's no point throwing the baby out with the bathwater, so to try and uncover what that is and enjoy that. You know, we've got a tremendous sense of fellowship at our church, and it's genuine fellowship that I personally haven't found outside of a church setting. So I attribute that to religious belief. I give religious belief the credit for that, and I think that's an encouragement to human flourishing, so it should be encouraged.
People may be just wondering at this point, why is an atheist in a church exactly? This is because you're married to a Christian.
Yeah.
And you keep company with many Christian friends because of that.
Yeah. And, you know, we actually have quite a lot of moral values in common. I think the stereotype would be that the unbeliever, or whatever they're called, have a kind of different, maybe materialistic or more selfish set of moral values. That's a stereotypical view. Mm. But I actually share many of the moral values of my friends. We disagree sharply on some, but not too much.
Let's just bring Tim in at this point. Tim, any thoughts on Andrew's experience as he's been through the experiment?
Well, very interesting, and thank you for doing it. And I was struck by something you said quite early on about how you'd insulated yourself from, as it was put to you, the sort of encumbrances of other people's views and predilections to interpret what you weren't or weren't experiencing one way rather than another, so as to sort of approach it as a sort of tabula rasa, which was only going to be written on by the experiences you actually had. And I thought that's an interesting way of praying. And it occurred to me that some would say that, oh, in fact, this is, if you like, not shielding you from the cognitive biases of others, but shielding your own cognitive biases from critical interaction with those who are more experienced at this whole practice of prayer than you are. And this is why you are to expect the result that you got, more so than if you hadn't engaged in it in that way. So I'm not myself endorsing that alternative view. I think there might be something to be said for sort of, if you like, trying the experiment both ways. You tried it one way, you could always try it the other. If you get back a negative result both ways, you can do an end run around that point and not have to engage with it. But I thought it was very interesting, and I at least think, you know, I've put the contrary view to you just for the purposes of argument, but I at least think there's something to be said for you thinking about it the way you did and proceeding in that fashion.
I'm going to just break in, guys. Would love to bring the experience of one of the people who, as it were, had a positive result. Now, we're not quite sure exactly how this counts, in what sense, but because many people will know that I shared this story early on in one of my video updates for the Atheist Prayer Experiment. This was Kendra, who signed up for getting involved, described herself as an agnostic, but that's fine, we're sort of saying atheists and agnostics welcome. Yeah. But then a week or two before the experiment began officially, she got in touch with me to say, I'm kind of going to have to withdraw from the experiment because I've actually become a Christian, which knocked me off my chair to some extent. But I asked for a few more details, and Kendra's kindly shared them. She says, I'm married to an atheist, and together we have listened to your show since nearly the beginning. I've always fought against believing in God, always hearing science and God can't mix. I tried and tried to not believe, but I've always been drawn back. I flip-flopped between fierce atheist to wishy-washy, occasional Christian. I guess I felt ashamed wanting to believe, so I'd look for reasons and excuses not to. She talks about sort of getting into Hitchens and Dawkins and etc. Then I heard about the experiment, decided to test God once and for all. I also tried to get my husband to do it, but he refused. I think I was hoping he'd join me so I could use the experiment kind of as a way to just admit it. Then I realised that I didn't feel I could any longer live without God. With God, I feel like I have hope and positivity. I feel safe. I feel like I have direction. I found that when I was an atheist, I felt lost and alone. I just couldn't deny my belief any longer. So now, thanks to you, your podcast and the experiment, I've decided to commit my life to God. I have found peace and meaning. So she goes on to give some more details, the fact that no one in her family attends church, so it will be a bit of a struggle. But my husband is supportive, thankfully, since our 11-year-old daughter has also decided she wants to be a Christian as well. Now, very interesting, because... I don't know whether sort of, Tim, really this falls outside the window that we had sort of established. Kendra got in touch with me obviously beforehand, but I don't know. It felt like it was a significant enough sort of thing to at least bear mentioning. And
I think you chose the sort of 40 days somewhat arbitrarily. Here's a round number. We've got to choose some number. Let's choose that. Here out go the emails and so on. And I think it would be implying an undue precision to count as sort of, if you don't get your email in by midnight on the last night, you don't count as having participated. If you conversely get yours in early, you count as not having participated. As we've already alluded to, I'm sure we'll come back to it, this is not some rigorously conducted, peer-reviewed scientific experiment. It's much more sort of free form than that. We'll come into whether or not it might have evidential value nevertheless. So you're sure happy to consider this, and it is an interesting story, if only because, but not only because, it sort of mirrors Andrew's case, it strikes me, on a number of points. Andrew said at one stage that he didn't want to believe that God existed, if I don't wish to sort of overinterpret that, but I took that as being evidence that you're quite sort of happy being an atheist. You don't feel there's a sort of God-shaped hole in your life that you're desperately trying to fill, and you're prepared to undertake anything, even if it seems to you to be some form of hypnosis to fill that hole. Kendra, conversely, she, again, I don't want to overinterpret it, but she seems to be wanting to say that she did feel this presence of this hole, and this is what drove her to conduct the experiment. So I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah. Andrew, what's your feeling, just briefly, on Kendra's story there?
Well, I think it raises the question of what it means to, if someone becomes a Christian, so she's become a Christian as a result of this process, what does that mean? Mm. Does that mean she takes on all of the Christian values and all the maybe the political values and views on how the earth was created? To what extent, what's the minimum someone has to do to become a Christian, and what does that mean?
I think that's an excellent question, one which only Kendra in a sense can answer from her perspective as to what it has meant to her to say she's now a Christian. From my brief interactions that I've had with Kendra, I think it essentially boils down to, well, I believe Jesus is who he said he was, and I don't think she's particularly suddenly turned into a Republican instead of a Democrat or whatever it may be. I just don't know where she is on that sort of thing, but Let's keep talking about this aspect of, can we call this an experiment? One interesting person who wanted to take part is Laura Shepstone, who is actually in the field of psychotherapy. She's been studying that and still going on to do further studies. Let's hear a bit of her story as she tells us about how she found getting on as an atheist with the atheist prayer experiment.
Laura, first of all, straight off the bat, the main question, do you feel that in the course of the 40 days, God was revealed to you in any way?
No, I don't. My experience was of no change whatsoever.
Tell us a little bit about why you decided to get involved in the first place.
It was brought to my attention by my research partner, I did my master's with, who is a very sort of strong Christian, very strong in her beliefs. And we, as a part of, from talking about neuropsychology, we talked a lot about her faith. And she sort of said, okay, if you're so sort of strong in your non-beliefs, you should test them out.
Mm.
And as a scientist, I thought, well, yeah, I definitely should.
Well, good on you for you know, stepping up to that challenge from your friend and doing that. There was some talk at the outset of whether it even qualified in very many ways as an experiment by its very nature. But did you sort of treat it as an experiment?
I tried to. I mean, I felt, you know, if we're dealing it as a proper experiment, it's not one. It wouldn't pass a sort of a scientific scrutiny. I felt it was much more a sort of an interesting kind of philosophical sort of test. Than a proper experiment. I mean, I personally tried to sort of put as much scientific rigor as I could do. For example, I didn't look on the Facebook page to see what other people were writing because I didn't want to be sort of influenced.
Yes. External
indeed.
Factors, yes.
Exactly. And I sort of kept a prayer log in, I hope, the way that a scientist would keep sort of experimental notes.
Was there any benefit at all that you felt from having taken part?
It helped me understand sort of where sort of religious people come from and their reasons for praying. I mean, it was quite nice sometimes, you know, for 3 minutes every day to sort of just sit and kind of reflect. Sometimes it wasn't all that helpful. I mean, in the log, I do mention that I had a few sort of rough days. I got quite sort of upset about something in my own life, and actually praying about it didn't help that much, sort of reflecting on it.
Mm.
It was much easier, better to distract myself from it.
You mentioned at one point in your log about the fact that at least at one point when on an aeroplane, feeling a little nervous, you did have a moment where you asked God to not let the plane crash, which suggests that religion is a very sticky concept to get out of the mental processes you had.
Personally, for me, it made me feel a bit like, oh gosh, I did feel it was a moment of weakness. I mean, I was raised a Christian until I was sort of 13 years old, and it is a sticky concept to get out of your head. I actually sort of, as part of my psychology studies, wrote and worked with psychologists who believe that sort of our religious sort of beliefs and thoughts come out of sort of how we are raised as children and our kind of the developmental sort of cognitive process that happen as children. Your children are very wont to believe things that don't rationally make sense, and religion might be an extension of that.
Do you think of yourself as someone who would have to have God reveal, if God does exist, God would reveal himself to you in a quite sort of scientific, methodological way, not through a sort of feeling or interesting set of coincidences or something?
I think there has to be an emotional element to whether God exists. I mean, I think if we rationally try to prove or disprove God, we're going to go round in circles. I don't feel that that's the answer. I think we have to feel God if we're going to. I mean, during this experiment, I felt nothing towards God. And this is why I think it's quite pointless in some ways to sort of argue with people who are religious about their beliefs, because they believe that and they feel that. And it's none of my business. I mean, I'm not an evangelical atheist, at least. I hope I'm not. There are sometimes, the only times that I have kind of, you know, felt that sort of sense of awe is when studying science. So I suppose I get my kind of spiritual sort of fix out of that.
There you go. The thoughts of Laura, a scientist herself, taking part in the atheist prayer experiment. Tim, some thoughts on the back of Laura's...
Well, again, as with Andrew, I'd like to say that what's being reported as a negative result is not without, it seems to me, evidential import for the people who have arrived at it. So I think Laura has taken up her friend's challenge. She's done this sincerely, it seems to me, from everything she's said. She's been open to the possibility that God might speak to her in a variety of ways. She's kept a log so as to be able to refresh her memory about it. She's really sort of gone for this. And at the end of it, she says she's felt nothing, and I take it that means sort of, you know, experienced nothing. She's not had any experience which she's inclined to interpret as God answering this prayer. And that is in itself, it seems to me, reason for Laura to think, oh, I was right after all, and to go back to her friend and say, well, I've done this now. My atheism is a little bit more grounded than it was beforehand. Absolutely sympathetic to the idea that it would be odd to call this scientifically grounded. You might expect, coming from a medieval university, that I'd be very sympathetic to the original sort of etymological roots of science, scientium, thinking of theology as the queen of the sciences, and hence in that this is an experiment in order to try and find out something theological, it's scientific. But no, I, of course, you know, language has moved on in 800-odd years. Sciences now do mean the natural sciences, physics, chemistry, biology, paradigmatically. This is obviously not a part of the natural sciences.
Laura raised that issue of belief in God isn't just a cold, logical, rational process. It does involve the emotions. And so, in that sense, perhaps to be expected that if someone does experience what they believe is God communicating to them in the course of prayer,
yes,
that will be an emotional reaction.
I think that must be true, mustn't it? Someone who said, oh yes, you know what, I had a Charlton Heston-esque voice appearing in my head the other day, a sort of burning bush which wasn't being consumed a few foot away from me, all of this sort of happened, and you know what, it was a totally emotionally vacant experience, a sort of blank fact impinging on my reality, and I went on 10 minutes later, much as I would have done had I just seen a rather unusual flower or something. I'd say, well, I'm starting to doubt that you really had the experience that you first described, because it seems to me impossible that cognitively you could have been in that state without emotionally being in another state. The only thing I'm concerned about is, just so we've, at one stage Andrew said he discovered that one of the reasons for not believing in God in his own case was that he didn't want to believe in God, and I mean, again, you know, Andrew is here, so we can ask him if I misunderstood him, but I'd say, well, that's one thing, but to go from emotion to fact seems to be travelling a torturous route that needs more careful mapping.
Well, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with some response to that question to Andrew, from Andrew. We're also going to be hearing from Kang Tran, a.k.a. Spooky Valaket. That was his pseudonym in the Atheist Prayer Experiment. Freki as well will be joining us, and we'll be hearing some comments from various other participants and some of the questions that have been raised, things like does the motivation that someone comes into this experiment with make a difference? So join us again in a couple of minutes' time for more here on the first show where we're investigating the Atheist Prayer Experiment.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to Unbelievable. This is the first of two programmes with me, Justin Brierley, in which we're looking back at the Atheist Prayer Experiment, something we ran for 40 days through September and October. Some 70 atheists took part, each praying for God to reveal himself to them. And, well, we had the results in. The vast majority have said they didn't feel any result from it, but there have been a couple of exceptions to that. We heard Kendra's story earlier. Kelly we'll hear about next week as well. Joining us on the line during the programme today is Andrew, who was one of the participants. In the studio here is Tim Mawson, on whose paper the whole experiment was based. And it raised so many interesting questions, Tim, in the course of this experiment, many that we aren't going to be able to touch on in the programmes we're doing on this. Let's hear from another participant who took part. This is Kang Tran, who went under the pseudonym Spooky Valike on the Facebook group, and you'll hear why he particularly had an interesting approach in the way that he decided to undertake the Atheist Prayer Experiment. Kang, tell me first of all why you decided you'd get involved in the Atheist Prayer Experiment.
Well, I've had these sort of conversations with friends of mine before, and I just wanted to be able to have a chance to say that I at least gave this sort of thing a try, and that I was open-minded enough to, dip my feet in there somewhere.
Hmm. And you did take this rather unusual step of actually videoing yourself. Let's just hear a little bit of that right now. This is just some audio from one of your videos of you kneeling down and praying for God to reveal himself to you.
Dear God, I've never come to you before. I've never known you to be there. But I'm coming to you now to humbly ask you to reveal yourself to me in whatever way that you see fit. I'm asking that you'll move me somehow inside to make me realize that you're there and that you'll give me a reason to believe.
Okay, so why did you decide to video rather than just do this kind of in private?
Well, I knew what people would say. I expect that I didn't do it sincerely enough or something like that, so I wanted something there, some kind of record to show that I did it as best as I could.
Well, it was fascinating to be able to actually watch and hear someone praying, and in many ways, for me, quite moving.
And I just want to throw in that I'm actually really surprised at the number of people who mentioned how moving it was. I thought it was just such a strange thing to hear, when for me it didn't mean much, but it meant a lot to other people.
How did it go? I understand, though, in the end, you didn't stick out the 40 days altogether.
No, I feel bad about that. After 15 days, at some point I just lost the willpower for it. I just didn't feel that anything was happening, and I was just wasting my time.
How did you feel? Was it a very awkward thing to be doing?
Oh, it was very awkward. And I mentioned it in my first video on day one that I felt very humiliated. I didn't expect to feel that way. It was very, very humiliating to me. Even when I didn't feel I was talking to anybody.
Probably some Christians can relate at some level to what you're talking about. Though I'd say that the general experience is one of, it's like a conversation, you know, even though you're not getting a voice back at you all the time, you still feel like you're talking to someone who is actually there, and therefore it's not a pointless exercise, as I suppose it must have felt like to you at some level.
Sure, and I think you know, maybe if on my end it feels humiliating, but on your perspective it's something more of humility and humbleness, if you can see the difference.
I think that's a very good way of putting it. There you are. Just a little segment of my conversation with Spooky Valake, the name he went under, Kang Tran, in reality. But if you want to hear the full conversation with both Kang and Laura and others who will play out during this programme and next, we're going to make them all available in full on the Atheist Prayer Experiment webpage, which you can find at premier.org.uk/atheistprayerexperiment. Before we start, have a chat about that with Tim. If you want to get in touch about today's show and give us your thoughts on anything that's been said or experiences shared by any of the participants, do feel free to email in. That's unbelievable@premier.org.uk. unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Tim, what do you make of someone actually videoing their experience and sort of laying it all out for the world to see?
I think that was very brave of him, and I think it's served his purpose well. As he described it, his purpose was so as to forearm himself against an accusation which he anticipated, viz. That he hadn't been sincere in being open to be spoken to by God in how whatever that God might be like, and in whatever way that God might feel best to speak to him. And by videoing it, and by the prayer, which, as I was listening to the words he was using, struck me as an excellent prayer. It seemed to me sincere and entirely open to God, whatever that God might be like, speaking to him in whatever way that God might choose to speak to him. And it's a pity he didn't continue, if you like, after the 15 days, because had he continued after the 15 days, he would have been accumulating even more evidence, presuming that he still didn't get any answer to it, not only that he was sincere, but that there wasn't any God. But, you know, he's done it for 15 days. Fair enough. I think it's reasonable from his starting point to consider that to be enough to establish that it's not doing anything for him and to move on to other matters.
We'll get to, towards the end of the show, talking about the fact that so many people didn't feel that anything happened and how, from a Christian perspective, you might want to talk to that.
Yeah.
I mean, but one of the things that came across there was obviously how weird it was for Kang. You know, this is, and it is just a weird concept. I think that's why people immediately think atheist prayer experiment. Yeah. It's obviously too incompatible things that we're putting together. Let me just read a couple of comments from a couple of others who sort of said essentially very similar things about the way they felt when they prayed. Here's someone who went by the name Pasta Sorcerer.
Okay.
I think a reference to the flying spaghetti monster that's a favourite among certain internet atheists. Here was her, though, and she said, by about day 5 or 6 of the experiment, I just felt I was talking to myself. It became an overwhelming feeling. I pushed through that and continued, though, but no matter how hard I tried, the feeling of how pointless it was continued right to the end. During the experiment, I felt drained, and I couldn't even continue the Bible reading that I'd been doing.
She'd been
reading the Bible to support it as well. So she said she stopped at about 30 days in. She said, I can tell when something isn't working. Here's Thomas, who wanted to say, on the question of did he find any value in taking part, he said it reminded me of how strong a delusion needs to be constantly reinforced to ensure the survival of religion in the harsh light of reason. So for him, prayer, if it does anything, is simply to sort of reinforce something that's an irrational thing to begin with. Any thoughts on the fact that obviously it was so odd for many atheists to pray, you know, like you are talking to someone who isn't there.
Although Kang sort of later on somewhat surprised me by saying that he felt humiliated, although there was an interesting sort of plan was he humiliated or feeling a sort of natural humility. I thought his prayer was excellent, just the sort of thing that I couldn't really sort of fault as someone who'd sort of thrown themselves into the spirit of these things and was open to any type of answer that it might receive. Pastor Sorcerer, she, I think, again, well done, you kept going with this despite thinking of it as pointless. But I'd encourage you to think that by having an experience or series of absences of experiences which you interpret as meaning that the experiment is pointless, you are actually gaining evidence that there isn't a God out there who wishes to speak to you. So you are weakly confirming your atheistic hypothesis. So we will come round to whether or not this should be all disturbing news for those who are theists in due course, no doubt. But for you, I'd say, well, you need to be a little bit more optimistic about how usefully you've spent your time. It's not been pointless for you because you've worked out that you've got this little bit of evidence through having tried this out that there isn't a God that you didn't have before you tried it out.
What before we get in a comment from Andrew, Thomas's point there that prayer to him at the end of the day seemed to be something that was for reinforcing beliefs that can't be rational to begin with.
Right, yeah. I couldn't quite see the argument there. So I take it he was saying, look, I've engaged in this experiment, and as a result of my engagement in it, I'm thinking that prayer is reinforcing religious belief. But he himself didn't seem to have been led to religious belief by engaging with it. So I would have thought the thesis that prayer exists so as to sort of promote and make easier religious beliefs which wouldn't withstand the cold light of reason was actually weakly disconfirmed by him having engaged in prayer and found himself to any extent drawn towards it. So I thought that there was I was missing some point between premise and conclusion, and I couldn't myself see how it could be filled in.
You can tell we've got a philosopher on, can't you, today on the programme. Tim Mawson, by the way, is my guest here in the studio, whose paper this whole thing was based on. Andrew, coming back to you, could you kind of sympathise there with Kang's strange sense of humiliation, he called it, at praying to a God he doesn't believe in?
Yeah, I missed a few days because I either forgot or just couldn't motivate myself to do it, and I think I was open with that on the blog. And it does feel really, it felt strange, because it was almost like I was trying to make myself believe in God. And I don't think you can choose your own beliefs. There are beliefs you can't choose. A Christian can't choose not to believe in God. So it felt false. So I asked myself, why does it feel strange? And that's where all the idea of biases came through in my own, looking into why it feels strange was what brought that out. So I do have sympathy, and especially towards the end, it'd take a lot of patience to keep at it and keep saying the same thing and getting the same answer.
Would it have helped? Some people sort of went slightly beyond the bounds of what we were asking them to do and prayed other things, prayed for friends, prayed that sort of thing. That we didn't ask anyone to do that, but some people, I think just for the sake of variation, if anything, felt like, well, sure, I'm going to do... Did you do that, or did you rigidly stick to just asking
not
God to review?
Not deliberately praying to God for friends. I would be keeping people in my thoughts, but not as part of the experiment. It's just part of the... When I was sat there, I would just think of other people as well. I didn't just dwell on the prayer experiment. So, and I think that's another thing which came out, which is it seems a bit strange that the creator of the universe would need prodding to tell him to reveal himself to me. I think all the Christians I would know would encourage someone to trust in God. So, like Kang's prayer, allowing God to reveal himself in whichever way God feels fit. I thought that was great. I thought it was a really good prayer. And so, in the same way, I didn't want to force God to reveal himself there and then, or that felt a bit strange as well.
Like ordering God around in some sense. Let's talk about this a bit, Tim. The whole question of whether this is testing God has come up. Not all Christians are big fans of this atheist prayer experiment, and even less so now that the results are in. What do you sort of say to that? Obviously, Andrew's a bit worried there. How can we know the way that God, if God does exist, would want to reveal himself to us? Are we kind of at liberty to sort of say, do it, God, I need you to tell me, and that sort of thing?
I think there's a number of issues sort of raised there. So, ducking to some extent the first one you raised, which is what would you say to a Christian who thought that this was misconceived for a variety of theological reasons, turning to the second, which is how do you frame the prayer such that you could sort of leave it open to God if he exists. Of course, if you're an agnostic, you're doubtful that he exists. If you're an atheist, you're pretty sure he doesn't. But it leaves it open to him, if he does exist, to answer it as he thinks best. And as I say, Kang seemed to be sort of very open-minded there. It did occur to me that this odd emotion, as it struck me, an odd sort of that he felt humiliated, and he said, "Oh, I suppose if you're Christian, you might think that it was a feeling of just appropriate humility as I, for the first time, came into the presence of God self." Knowingly or openly to the possibility that that's what I was doing anyway. Someone might say, "Oh, well, this was God revealing himself to you through the emotion of an appropriate humility." The fact that you felt humiliated beyond any capacity for you naturally to explain in terms of your own previous psychology is itself evidence that there was a God he's not in the business of humiliating you, but he is in the business of allowing you to overcome moral faults in your own character. And if Kang, you report that you have a problem with humility, well, then that's a support for that line of interpretation. Now, he's not here, so we can't sort of tell him if that is the case. And of course, if he was here and he said, "You know what, I'm brilliant at humility, it's something I do fantastically, so there's no need for God to have helped me out in that respect," you could see there'd be something slightly paradoxical about us taking that at face value. But that did remind me of an email that I'd got from someone sort of in parallel, which was to the effect that the experiment was an interesting one, but I think it would be more effective if those participating also choose a personal moral weakness and pray to God for victory over it. I don't think God wants us to know of his existence as a fun fact to know, but out of a desire for victory over sin, salvation, and he goes on in that vein. And I thought, yes, I mean, that would be an interesting sort of iteration to the activity. But by that stage, it was all in place, so I didn't sort of forward this and suggest the change. And you know, then you might think, well, if you are able to self-identify a moral weakness and it improves over time, is this evidence that there's a God? Is it not? Again, it's capable of multiple interpretations, but I could imagine some types of victories might be more reasonably attributed to God, others more reasonably attributed just to your reflecting on this in your own time and making progress all on your off your own bat, as it were. I'm willing to get to the second question if you want, but I'm conscious I've sort of spoken at length now, and you may want to cut across.
I think we'll save that question maybe for next week's show,
okay.
Because I think we'll have room for it there. I do want to bring in another voice at this point, but let me just remind you that you're listening right now to Unbelievable with me, Justin Brierley. It's the show that aims to get you thinking, and today's show, the culmination, really, of a project that we rolled out during September and October, the Atheist Prayer Experiment, in which some 70 atheists prayed for 40 days for God to reveal himself to them. And Tim Mawson, the author of the philosophical paper on which the experiment was based, is with me in the studio. Andrew Nightingale, one of the participants on the phone, and we've been hearing from some of those who took part during the course of the experiment.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Look forward to hearing your responses. I should say also at this point that we were hoping to be joined by a non-Christian philosopher for this discussion. Peter Cave, we had hoped, would be with us, but not very well, unfortunately, this recording. So we put that on hold. And in fact, as it's turned out, we've got enough to talk about without Peter joining us, but perhaps he can send us his thoughts in having listened to the programme later on. Okay, let's hear from another person who was very active on the Facebook group. This was Freki, based out in Hawaii, and she's an atheist, obviously, took part, and here's some of her thoughts on the Atheist Prayer Experiment as she undertook it.
I was not contacted by any gods that I could identify.
Okay.
As far as I could tell.
Freki, you decided to actually take quite a particular approach, praying to different conceptions of God that exist in the world.
Yeah, I tried for about the first week and a half. I tried to do the very abstract prayer, and it was honestly just giving me a headache. It was becoming a chore, and it felt very futile and weird to me. And so I was choosing either gods that I knew a lot about. I tried the Christian God because it was very much a Christian experiment, but I also tried some other faiths I'm very interested in because it was easier for me to sort of pour my heart into an appeal to like a concept of a deity that I would want to worship.
I think Christians can in some way sympathize with that in as much as a Christian conception of God would be praying to God through Jesus. But for you, Did it change depending on which God you had in mind, the way you prayed and the way you felt?
I tried to do a little bit of research, and many of the pagan gods are kind of for specific things, and so I could pray specifically to Ganesha for help with getting through some obstacle. And there are certain gods. I've always been a fan of Hinduism, and so when I tried praying to Shiva, I could put a lot more emotion into it. That was, I think, the most passion-filled prayer, and I spent probably about 45 minutes on the day that I was praying to Shiva. I was just writing a better love letter, I guess, to extend my metaphor.
I can imagine there being an objection here from a Christian who might say, be tempted to say, it comes across to me as sort of being mocking, trying to make a rhetorical point about, you know, there are so many gods out there, which one do you choose? What would your response be to that?
I can see what they mean, but on the other hand, there's no real reason for me to prioritize Christianity over the other ones. You know, the exact same complaint, since it was supposed to be a neutral experiment, could be made by a Hindu who was seeing that the experiment really was oriented towards a Christian perspective.
Would it cause a problem, though, in a sense, if someone did come into this making a kind of point from the outset about how silly religion is because of all these different conceptions of God, that would in some way affect their objectivity when it comes to being open to the idea of God in the experiment.
It's like question whether any of us really can achieve perfect objectivity, but certainly, I mean, if they're coming in trying to make some sort of a mockery or some sort of outside point, then they're not performing the experiment in good faith. And for at least from what I could tell, the atheists that I talked to in this experiment were genuinely looking for something. Although towards the end of the experiment, I think it started to get a little ragged. People were getting tired.
You did have an interesting experience, though, some way into the experiment. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, I was crossing the intersection, and a driver blew through the red light in front of me and hit a young woman on a scooter and knocked her sprawling. And so I went and directed traffic around the young woman while the paramedics were showing up. And people were trying to pull around me to pull through the intersection to get ahead, and were honking at me as though I was inconveniencing them somehow by keeping them from running over this injured person. And I was really very angry that there was a big group of sort of looky-loos, you know, standing holding their kids up to get a better view. And
you came back and you sort of said a prayer. In that moment, what were you praying? Who were you praying to? What was your prayer?
At first, I tried to pray for, you know, the health of a young woman who was hit, but I realized that I was just kind of saying, please, paramedics, take good care of her. I wasn't really talking to God. And I was trying to pray for all the people who were standing around looking, but I felt like I was a liar, honestly. Like, I didn't feel like I was asking for them to be forgiven, because I thought that they should feel bad about what they did, actually. And so finally I was just looking for, praying for the ability in myself to forgive these guys, because anger is kind of a toxic thing to carry around with you all the time, particularly when you're angry at strangers and you can't do anything about it. I'd like to say that it helped, but I think it's probably obvious from my voice that I'm still a little worked up about it.
I wish we had more time to talk, Frecky, but thank you so much for your really interesting involvement, and I hope our paths will cross again sometime.
Thanks so much, Justin. This was absolutely a pleasure.
There you go. Frecky's interesting story, both the fact that she took this opportunity to pray to different types of God, and that story of a prayer in quite stressful circumstances, obviously. Tim, we sort of addressed this a little bit when we spoke before, but there is a sort of an objection that came up early on when I talked about the atheist prayer experiment from some atheists was, well, which God? There are so many. How do we know we've prayed to the right God? This came up a number of times on the forums as well. What would you say to that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I talk about it a little bit in the paper. I suggest that for these purposes, the best prayer, hence, to sidestep these concerns, keeps the God to whom it's addressed as non-specific as possible. So rather than saying God of Christianity, if you exist, you just say God if you're out there, and then, as Candide, reveal yourself in whatever way you want. So you wouldn't set some parameters that it has to be this miracle this day or that miracle the other, and then all of the sort of onus, as it were, would be on God to reply to you as he or she thought fit, and you wouldn't be setting any parameters prior to going into this, either about what sort of God it was that was listening to you or about how that God would reply to you. And this Frecky reported that she did for some bit, but she found it gave her headache. So, well, something giving you a headache is, you know, in itself a good reason to avoid doing the thing. So I can't really object to her then having tried something else. Then, though, she does run the risk of, you know, her prayer not being heard by the God who really exists, so that she prays to Ganesh, and doesn't get an answer if that's what happened. Although, you know, 45 minutes, I mean, that did sound like an awfully involved...
Yes. I couldn't tell, actually, whether it was 4:25 minutes or 4:45.
Oh, okay, so maybe I missed...
Frecky might have to confirm exactly how long she ended up praying.
Yeah, no. But then that, you know, suppose if she did find, and it sounded as if she hadn't done, but if she had found great sort of spiritual fulfillment, resonance, the anger that she'd felt towards these looky-loos, I think she called them, then sort of dissipating rather more efficiently when she was in this sort of mode than when she was praying to the God of Christianity. Not conclusive, and there are other explanations to it, but I think that she could, on sort of premises that it's not unreasonable, suppose she holds, infer that it was slightly more likely that Ganesh existed than that the God of Christianity existed.
I suppose that the main thing is that a lot of atheists did find it difficult praying a quite abstract prayer.
We'll
hear in next week's show another person who found that changing the conception of God that they were praying to helped them to be able to pray in the first place. We'll go to another quick break, and then we'll come back for 10 minutes or so of chatting over some of the things we've heard in today's show, and Andrew, who's on the line, will join us as well to talk about that. We're talking about the Atheist Prayer Experiment. Tim Mawson is a philosopher. He's a Christian. He joins me in the studio today as we look back on the 40 days that some 70 atheists spent praying for God to reveal himself to them. The vast majority have said they experienced no answer that they could tell, at least from God, with a couple of exceptions. People who one of whom says they are a Christian now, and the other who we'll hear from next week, who says that they do believe in God. But come back on the other side of a short break, and we'll be continuing to look into the results and some of the experiences and questions raised by the Atheist Prayer Experiment here on the show that aims to get you thinking unbelievable.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to Unbelievable. It's Saturday afternoon. This is the first of two shows in which myself, Justin Brierley, the host, is looking into the Atheist Prayer Experiment that we held over a 40-day period during September and October. During that time, some 70 or so atheists signed up to agree to pray for 40 days for God to reveal himself to them. And all kudos to those who took part, because it's no easy thing, I think, to subject yourself to something like this, you know, praying to a God you don't believe in. I think that's a line from a song by The Script, actually, but someone suggested it should be the anthem for the experiment. But joining me in the studio today in the first of these two programmes is Tim Mawson, the Christian philosopher on whose paper, Praying to Stop Being an Atheist, the whole thing was based. And we'll come to the ultimate question next week of whether, as the paper argues, atheists are under a sort of obligation in the course of their trying to work out if God does or doesn't exist, under some obligation to pray as part of that experiment, as part of their investigations. For now, Andrew also joins me on the phone. Andrew Nightingale, who's taken part, has said he didn't have any sense that God spoke to him during the time he prayed. Well, a couple of questions that I think will be topmost in the mind of many Christians, especially Tim, is you know, okay, so we've had a couple of people who have reported a positive experience, a tick, as it were, in the box, but the vast majority are in the mm-hmm. no, nothing happened box. Mm. So you've already said during the course of today's show that this perhaps gives a little evidence to the atheist who doesn't experience anything that they're justified in their belief that there is no God.
Yeah.
Of course, for anyone who has the opposite feeling, it gives them justification for their belief in God. Now, what are we to make? Should Christians be terribly depressed at the end of this program that most of the atheists taking part didn't experience a change of belief?
I certainly don't think they should infer from the results in the aggregate, as it were, anything, to be frank. So I do think that if an individual sincerely, and I think everyone needs to be taken as their own best judge about whether they're sincere or not, sincerely prays for 40 days that God, in whatever form he or she it may exist, reveal himself in whatever form he, she or it thinks best, and receives nothing by way of reply, then that person is collecting evidence, not conclusive evidence, but some evidence that they are right to be atheistic, assuming that's their starting point. But I don't think, I think that, if you like, the experiment as a whole is, if you like, less than the sum of its parts. I don't think you can then say, oh, well, let's look at the stats. 71 people signed up, 77 say no result, 2 say yes result. Therefore, from this, we can infer that the probability that God exists is 2 over 71. But I think it's not the case that you should infer, even if I say that this person has got, through an experience that they've had, evidence in favour of atheism, that is me getting evidence in favour of atheism. Because I think what counts as evidence for a particular person of a particular hypothesis is only partly determined by the nature of the experience, and it's also partly determined by the presuppositions and cognitive structures they bring to bear in engaging with that experience. And yours, in hearing about this third party, will be probably very different. So you shouldn't be depressed. You could feel sorry. I think as a Christian, you would presumably think, well, Christianity is true. It's an important truth. I do hope of people that they come to see that it's true as well. It means a lot in my life. I hope it will come to mean a lot in their life. And sorry for them, if you like, that they didn't get that result. But you shouldn't be, if you like, sorry for yourself. Does that make some degree of sense?
It does. I mean, here was the way that Orest put it. He was on the Facebook group, was using the name Overlapping Magisteria, but he sort of had a comment along these lines. He says, even though he didn't believe he had any contact from a god, he says, that's not to say the experiment was without value. As stated in Tim Mawson's paper, the silence that I received could be seen as some evidence that God does not exist. It's not solid evidence, but it would point in that direction. It's alternately possible that a god does exist, but does not want or doesn't care about my belief. Another thing gained was that the experiment introduced me to the Unbelievable show, which I've been enjoying. Well, thank you very much, Orest. But he says, overall, I'm glad I did the experiment, even though it did start getting tedious towards the end. I can honestly say I gave God a shot. Although I'm not closing the door on belief, it was nice to shout into the darkened room, even though it does seem clear to me now that the room is empty. Obviously, he's felt that there's been a... He values having taken part... but he doesn't say outright, therefore God does not exist. But as you say, it's sort of has given him some some degree of, you know, further evidence. I suppose equally, the reason, you know, an atheist isn't going to believe that God does exist purely on the testimony of a Christian saying, well, I do believe God spoke to me in prayer and that I have a...
Yeah, I mean, there is a potential sort of argument from the religious experiences of others, and one could say, well, if one wants to, one could place these 37 people in the context of the thousands and millions, indeed, of people over the course of human history, a proportion of which have had experiences which seem to them to reveal a supernatural order, a proportion of which have had experiences which seem to reveal to them the absence of such an order. If you could find that statistic, whatever it was, out, would there be an argument from that statistic, needing other premises, of course, to the conclusion that therefore there probably is or probably isn't a God? But none of this has supplied those other premises, nor has it really gone a long way to supplying that statistic. So that's why I think it's evidentially inert at that sort of meta level, even though for any individual who's partaking in it, I think they'll gain some evidence. Yeah.
What would you say about the results, Andrew? Do they kind of, for you, you know, give you cause to believe that there's a bigger case to be made against the existence of God, or vice versa?
I think it's... I'd echo what Tim says in that it tells about that what that person's personal experience was. And earlier on, Tim said to move from emotion to fact requires extra work. That's one of the arguments of atheists, that a lot of Christians have emotional experience and infer facts about the universe and about other people who aren't Christians based on their own personal emotional experience. I mean, I've actually had a conversation about testing God with a group of Christians every month or so. We have a thing called Upper Room. And the subject of testing God came up and what to do with the results. And it seems that it's okay to test God as long as the answer is always yes. So my question would be, is if the results were the other way round, if the majority of people came back as converts, would Christians treat that evidence as even-handedly as they do what appears to be that the atheists aren't persuaded that God exists? And it's that even-handedness or lack of that seems to be the crux of the argument about whether, you know, how to deal with the results of prayer experiments.
Mm. Yes, yeah, absolutely. And there are other types of prayer experiments that have been done, aren't there, sort of aimed at testing whether healing is more efficacious when people are prayed for and that sort of thing. And always these things are contested as to whether you can, adequately control for the factor in this whole thing, which is God, presumably, which seems a sort of thing you can't put in a test tube. One of the blog posts that I read in relation to this talked about the fact that, essentially boiling it down, that God's under no obligation, if you like, to satisfy our intellectual curiosity.
Yeah.
That if you like, God may be more interested in people coming to love him rather than simply coming to acknowledge that he exists and then sort of essentially decide what they want to do with that information.
Yeah. I think that's it's a good point. So if I'd been hearing from some people who participated in this experiment the claim that they had conducted this experiment, that they had been open-minded to any evidence that might present itself to them, but one thing was for sure, that even if God had appealed to them in a sort of blinding light, they weren't going to change any of their ways of living whatsoever, I'd think, well, this doesn't strike me as the sort of person who is perhaps open-minded enough for their request to be providing God with a reason to speak to them, because if their self-description is right, God, knowing of it that it's right, would know, well, there's no point in me speaking to them anyway, because I don't want just to insert a little bit of metaphysical truth into a system of thought in their head when it will have no practical implications for their life. But I think everybody's reports have to be taken at sort of, you know, their own face value. Hearing from Andrew, hearing from Kang, hearing from Laura, hearing from Frecky, they didn't strike me as saying that of themselves, and so I have no reason to believe that's true of them.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose it comes down a little bit to motivations, and I spoke to Frecky a little bit about that. If someone had come in with the object of kind of treating it as a sort of way of making fun, ridiculing, let's say, you'd have to ask, well, can you treat their prayers at that point as sincere if they're kind of being done in the sort of in that fashion? But then at the same time, you don't want to kind of overload people with a sort of, well, your prayers have to look like this, feel like this, like that, in order to qualify as a prayer. And as you say, we're not in the position to judge the motivations of individuals in any given situation. That's something between them and, well, either God or their own brain.
And I think there's sort of maybe two levels of open-mindedness. So I might say, I'm going into this experiment as an atheist, and I'm very sort of open-minded about God giving me evidence, but it would have to be evidence that met these and these pre-existing criteria I have for what would count as good evidence for me of God's existence. I'm not willing to allow God to affect my cognitive structures such that, as a result of engaging in this experiment, I start to take as evidence stuff which I wouldn't have started to take as evidence before I engaged in this experiment. So that reveals a certain level of open-mindedness, but also a certain sort of restrictiveness about what it is one's prepared for God to do and get counted as him doing it. A deeper level of open-mindedness might be one that said, I'm prepared to have God if my cognitive structures are such as not to be properly truth-directed at the moment. If I need some moral or emotional re-gearing before I can properly engage with the sorts of things that really would be evidence of God, but I'm too blind to see it at the moment, well, then I'm prepared for God to do that too. And that would be a sort of lowering of a defence more than one had lowered in the first case. And I can see that if you were an atheist, you might think that sort of lowering of the second level of defence was you becoming somewhat weak-minded and woolly thinking and likely to be misled by peer pressure and the like, you opening yourself to cognitive biases that you previously managed to foreclose. If you're a Christian, you might think of it as an appropriate humility in the light of the God who isn't going to accept finite human cognitive structures as the limit to his mode of operation in the world, but rather transcends them and will seek to enable you for an educative process to transcend your own limitations at any moment.
It's incredible how you sound like a philosopher at every moment. You're probably completely unaware of this, Tim, but it's
I'm going to be taking
thing.
This as a compliment.
It is.
Oh, good.
Well, we're going to have to draw things to a close, but we'll, of course, be continuing them next week. So thank you very much, Andrew, for chipping in as well during today's programme. And do keep in touch. And you're still obviously in contact with many Christians around you and continue to have interesting conversations. I'd like to hear how they progress over the course of time.
Thanks, Justin.
great to have you with us. Thank you for being a good sport and taking part in this experiment. And we're going to be coming back next week, as I say, to continue looking at this. We'll hear the story of Kelly, one of the others who reported a positive outcome. She does believe in God, having completed the experiment, as well as from others who didn't receive any belief in God in the course of praying. We'll hear from Ali, Bob, Charlie, and others. Questions about coincidences will be top of the agenda next week. What would it take? What kind of evidence would count for belief in God? So come back for that, same time next week. For the moment, thank you very much, Tim, for joining me today.
Well, thank you, and thank you, Andrew. I found everything everyone's had to say very interesting.
Well, we'll be back for part two on our classic replay next week, looking back on our atheist prayer experiment. Do please get in touch if you have any thoughts of your own. Should we do this sort of thing again, perhaps, or not? Happy to hear what you think. Do email me, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. And you can find links to our newsletter, the YouTube channel, ways to give, the archive of past shows, and loads more resources for exploring faith at our website, premierunbelievable.com. See you next time.